The following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. Welcome to Commodore Hour. Over the next 60 minutes, we'll break down the latest in Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers. Now, here's your host, Kevin Ingram.
Welcome to Commodore Hour on a beautiful Monday here in Nashville, Tennessee. Great to have you with us. Coming up on today's show, we'll have a couple segments with Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse as his team gets sent to play in the SEC tournament this week. Also later on, men's golf coach Scott Limbaugh will tell us about a terrific finish for his squad down at the LSU Invitational. And a little bit later on, Nakia Davis, a Vanderbilt Athletic Hall of Famer, class of 2017, a great golfer and the first African-American women's golfer in the Southeastern Conference. She's going to be our guest a little bit later on in the show. So a good guest list lined up for us, as always. A little of what's going on. Men's basketball, a busy week to finish the regular season. Lost at LSU last Tuesday, 83-68. Max Evans, 20 points in that game. Went to Cincinnati and won in a game added earlier in the week, and on Thursday, Commodores 178-64. Scottie Pippen Jr. was back in action, scored a career-high 36 points, 10 out of 13 from the field, 5 of 6 from 3, and 11 of 12 from the foul line. And Jordan Wright put together his first double-double of his career, 15 points and 11 boards. And then on Saturday, it was Oxford and Ole Miss. Commodores fall 56-46 in the rematch from the previous week, and that wraps up the regular season. 8-15, 3-13 in the SEC. And coming up this week, everything resets. SEC tournament is here. First round on Wednesday night against Texas A&M. 6 o'clock start at Bridgestone Arena. We'll have 5:30 pregame. A&M, of course, one of the two teams Vanderbilt hasn't played in the SEC. I joke that I finally get to use all the game prep I did. I prepped fully for two games. They both got postponed, but we will see the Aggies and Commodores face off at 6 o'clock at Bridgestone on Wednesday night. As for baseball, Tim Corbin's squad now 9-1 with the weekend sweep of UIC down from Chicago 15-0, 5-2, and 4-2 to run the win streak to 6. The series wrapped up yesterday with Jack Leiter, another excellent performance. 5-plus innings, 11 strikeouts for his third win. Nick Maldonado pitched an inning. Ethan Smith, a 3-inning save. They combined for 16 strikeouts in the day. Jack Bulger's first career home run and a 3-run third. Parker Nolan drove in 2 with a bounce out and a sack fly. Kamar Rocker also 3-0 and 6, struck out 11 and retired the last 11 hitters in the win on Saturday. Carter Young with a home run and 3 hits. He's homered in 4 of the last 6 games, 6 for 12 on the week. Thomas Schultz and 4 relievers combined on a 2-hit shutout back on Friday. Young and Keegan went back-to-back in the 7th. Enrique Bradfield was 3 for 4 in that game. He stole 4 bases in the series, and he's the SEC leader with 8. Coming up next, tomorrow against Memphis at 4:30 at Hawkins Field, and then the first road trip of the season against nationally ranked Oklahoma State out in Stillwater Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We'll have all those games for you, of course. The baseball has won 9 of its first 10. Coming up next, we're going to visit with head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse. This is Commodore Hour. It's brought to you in part by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Education Lottery is proud to have raised more than $5.5 billion to support education programs in Tennessee. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Live from the Music City, this is Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on this Monday night. Vanderbilt plays Texas A&M on Wednesday in the SEC tournament. 6 o'clock tip-off for round one over at Bridgestone Arena. Had a chance earlier to visit with head coach Jerry Stackhouse. Here's part one with the coach. We are joined by Coach Jerry Stackhouse, and I guess to put the wraps on last week, 3 road games in 5 days, LSU, Cincinnati, and then Ole Miss. By the time you got to the game Saturday, you think the guys are starting to feel the fatigue a little bit?
Well, I think they probably did. It's more of a mindset. I think it's more mental fatigue than it was really physically, because we tried to rest them. We didn't do a lot. Just went in and kind of smelled the gym a little bit on that day in between. We didn't get up and down at all. Some of our low-minute guys that don't play a lot, they play some 4-on-4. But those guys had mostly a recovery day. But I think we came out. We had some energy to start the game. Just our attention to detail and our focus into our game plan wasn't really good. And obviously we had some great looks early against that 1-3-1 trap that didn't go down. And it's kind of predicated on us making some of those shots early to get them out of it. But when we didn't make some shots, they stayed in a little bit longer. So it's just again, you know, as we know, it's basketball. It's make or miss. And when you make a few things change, when you miss, you know, they just kind of teed off on us a little bit there.
They do really stretch out that 1-3-1. It just seemed like a lot of possessions where you're up against a shot clock and just hard to get a good look at the end there.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the first half, I mean, we had some really good looks. I mean, we did exactly what we wanted to do. I thought we were a little bit passive once we didn't make shots. We didn't really know what to do, and maybe that's on us to maybe have a couple of more options. I think we went to screening a little bit more there in the, you know, in the second half, trying to bring it up, you know, big to try to set a ball screen, and we were able to pull some triggers there to get downhill a little bit. So it's one of those things that I thought we had, you know, we prepared for it, thought we would make some shots, and then we didn't really have a plan B against it, you know. Yeah. And everybody started to press a little bit and got some, you know, they got a few turnovers, got out in transition, got away from us a little bit. But, I mean, 56 points, man, we live with that most nights, you know, holding a team to that. And obviously we just weren't able to score ourselves.
Cincinnati game, meanwhile, was a whole lot more fun. Scotty returned, scored 36. I know you like how he got his teammates involved early in the game, and then he was really efficient in getting his points. 13 shots and 12 free throws to get 36. You'll take that every time.
Absolutely. I thought he did a really good job of just kind of letting the game come to him. You know, guys were aggressive and confident and was making shots early on. Our defense was pretty good. They made some tough shots against us. But yeah, he, you know, had a great game. He had fresh legs. He, you know, he had some effects after that game, even though it wasn't, you know, a setback. It was still, once you, you know, play that many minutes from kind of being inactive.
Yeah.
He had to, you know, work on his body a couple of days. And, you know, I don't think he was as fresh. I mean, probably more so than the other guys. He was probably a step slow on Saturday. So it's good that we were able to get a day off yesterday. You know, pretty, you know, film light day to day, and then we'll get back to work tomorrow and try to gear up for Wednesday.
Yeah, I guess that kind of leads my next question. Health wise, is he in a pretty good place to get ready to play a conference tournament play?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that was kind of my mindset of, you know, we're going to go ahead and start that, that recovery, you know, in the second half. You know, you didn't see any more Scottie Pippen that game.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thinking that let's not waste a lot of energy on the, you know, kind of a miracle comeback. I thought the guys that were in there did a good job of kind of closing that gap a little bit and doing some good things. But wanted to, you know, because Brandon did tell me on Friday that, you know, Scotty wasn't anything major, but he did have a little, you know, residual effect from that game. So we wanted to be extremely smart with that, give him some days of recovery. Hopefully he has fresh legs again, similar to what he had in Cincinnati on Wednesday night against Texas A&M.
I've had a couple of people ask me about Dylan, how he's coming along. Any update on his recovery and rehab, you know, after having the surgery on his knee a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's riding around in one of those little motorized carts, you know what I'm saying? They take care of him around here. So, so and the next thing I look up, we were going over for COVID testing, and Jordan Wright was riding in the cart and he was standing up. I was like, something's wrong with this picture.
Wait a minute.
yeah, so, but no, I think that, you know, it is what it is with Dylan right now, man. You know, the surgery went well, successful by all accounts from the doctors, and now it's just about that recovery. They want him moving around and walking, but he's off for a few months from actually pounding again, you know, just to make sure that thing heals. So it's not ideally what we want going into the off season, you know, where you want to get guys in the gym and getting better. But if it was anybody that has a full grasp of what we're doing, it's Dylan DeSue. So, and I know he's going to work his butt off to try to get back there sooner than what the doctors are telling him. But we want him to be smart and make sure that he doesn't come back too fast and make sure that we don't have any setbacks and he can come back to stay and have a huge stretch of hopefully some years without having any more issues with that knee.
Jerry, how nice has it been to see these seniors win a couple games down the stretch here, especially Max, who's had some really nice games? LSU, of course, comes to mind right away, but that's been pretty cool to watch, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, these guys have, you know, worked their butts off, and it's glad they were able to get, you know, some reward. I mean, we wish we would have had more. We had some opportunities to have more, but it is what it is. And I think we would take them, you know, later, if that's what it means. But it is good for these guys to have some positives, and again, a great opportunity coming up here to add to that, you know. And I think it's all about, you know, our mindset and our focus, and having a good understanding of what we're trying to do and coming out and doing it. I mean, I think that more so than anything, you know, even the Ole Miss game, yeah, it was more of our own doing. I mean, when I go back and watch the film, you know, yeah, it's the 1-3-1, but we, you know, there's so much other things that led to that, that when we watch today, again, we're going to kick ourselves, because it's like, hey, we did it to ourselves again. And we got to find a way to stop doing that. You know, you talk about those mistakes happening earlier in the season and not happening, you know, at this point of the season, but it's still happening. So we got to make sure that we address it. And hopefully when we say we got a plan and we're going to hit the ball when it goes to the elbow, we hit the ball when it goes to the elbow and not, I thought, no, you ain't thought that. That's you was in there. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's a matter of focus. And hopefully we'll have extreme focus coming up, starting Wednesday.
Coach Jerry Stackhouse is our guest. This is Commodore Hour. We will have more for you coming up in just a moment. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. We are visiting with Coach Jerry Stackhouse as Vanderbilt gets set to take on Texas A&M in the first round of the SEC tournament coming up Wednesday night. Do you kind of look at the tournament and say, okay, this is a fresh start, a reset for this group?
Definitely. I mean, I think it's, you know, the regular season is over and everybody's pretty much even right now. Obviously, you got, you know, higher seeds who have the buys and whatnot, and we're, you know, playing on, opening night. You know, you don't want to necessarily be there, but again, like I said, if it meant us having not to see Ole Miss again, it's not the worst thing. You know, just because, I mean, they are. You know, as much as I say that we, you know, kind of did some things to ourselves, they're an athletic team, and they pose some problems with their size on the inside, the athletes that they have running around. But again, we got to come in with that mindset of let's make sure that we lock into this team one game at a time. You know, we have no room to try to look ahead. Let's just try to focus on Texas A&M and you know, lock into a game plan that we feel that'll give us the best chance to have success against them, and let's go at it. I mean, we got as much opportunity as anybody else to do something special in this tournament, and I think our guys know that. They understand that we play, you know, we can play a level of basketball on both ends that's as good as anybody in this league, and it's just about going out there and doing it.
Yeah, I was joking that I finally get to use all the game prep I did for Texas A&M a couple different times. Is there still a lot of unknown, though, with them, given that they've only played two games since the start of February?
Well, I mean, I think they are who they are. I mean, I watched, you know, a couple games that they played, and, you know, they're going to mix it up a little bit. Again, we got to be prepared to go against matchup zones. You know, that, you know, it's just kind of active guys, you know, just hustling and being all over the place. You know, they have a system and a rhythm to what they're doing, but it can disrupt you, you know, and I think we just got to make sure that, you know, against most zones or anything, you got to get that ball in the middle and somebody got to make plays. And I mean, I think that's what more so than us being able to execute our man-to-man offense against them. We got to be prepared to, okay, once we get a seam, make a play for somebody else or make a play for yourself. And that's how you have to beat a team like that. They're not going to allow you. They want to be disrupted. They're not going to let you run all your pretty plays and do everything that you want to do. So it stands that once you have an advantage, somebody got to step up and take and make a shot in the paint, or at least draw some attention and try to find some opportunities for kickouts for shooters on the perimeter. And it's as simple as that. Not overcomplicating things. Just going out and again trying to make more baskets than the other team. And I think those opportunities will be there.
We get much of a chance to actually get on the court at Bridgestone and get a look at that place, or is that pretty limited for you going into this thing?
No, I think they give everybody an opportunity to practice there and have a shoot around. I mean, even though we're, you know, at home in Nashville, it's still like everybody's on the road, and then we'll get an opportunity to go to the arena, have a practice, and get a feel of the court and everything, just kind of that atmosphere. So it should be good. I mean, we got some fans. They're letting fans back in, and you know, we're going to hopefully we have some some guys, you know, being at home, have a nice crew there to support us and give us a little bit of an edge that maybe the other teams won't have early on.
We talked about Isaac McBride the other day, getting healthier and having a solid finish to the regular season, scored 16 against Ole Miss. How do you see him developing as a weapon, even beyond the end of this season?
Well, I just think he has to, you know, continue to be aggressive. And again, we talk about not overthinking things and just being, you know, sound defensively. I think that's more the for Isaac, the challenge is making sure that he's, you know, he's steady and solid defensively as a point guard, you know, guarding the ball mostly, hearing coverages and jumping into those coverages is paramount in what we need to do. And those are some of the things that he struggled with, you know, some this year. And it's still, you know, I don't think as good as he will be. Once again, you have a whole summer this summer to work on those things. Something that he didn't have coming into this year. Everything he's done has kind of been on the fly.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, and then precious situation. I mean, practice is practice, but the opportunity that you get to showcase that is for keeps. So, you know, and we're in a business where we can't allow to look at a lot of mistakes when we got other guys that are capable of not doing it. So, again, his leash was probably shorter this year. And then Scotty went out for a while, and he was able to come in and help us and, you know, help us get a big win against Ole Miss here. And I think that did wonders for his confidence. And now it's just, again, about him putting it all together. He has the ability to be an asset for us on the offensive end, but will he get a chance to do it because of his, you know, things that he need to correct on the defensive end? And I think he will. He wants to do it. So we're excited about his future, man, and what he can bring to the table for us. Hopefully we can get these guys learning curve, you know, sped up a little bit as we'll be able to have more of a summer approach unlike we did last year.
I've enjoyed seeing Akeem Adichipe get a few more minutes on the court lately. He's really active. He has good hands. How have you seen him progress?
I don't know how many minutes he played. It wasn't too many, but he was our leading offensive rebounder. So that says a lot, or it says a lot, really, because I mean, Drew Weicker with one rebound was our second leading rebounder. So that doesn't pose for a great night, but no, right. Akeem has ability to do some things that, you know, our fours and fives. I mean, he guarded Shula one time out there on the perimeter, and that's what he has the ability to do. I mean, to step out and. If you want to switch late ball screens, you know, late in the shot clock or something like that, it's not a disadvantage for him. He's going to go to the boards every time. Again, as a young player, just with all of the sets and everything that we have, him just becoming more comfortable and familiar with what he needs to do there. But he's gotten better, man. He's gotten better every week, and he has a great attitude. This is a beautiful type red shirt year for him,
yeah.
You know, because it doesn't count against him. And he was able to play some minutes. And again, don't be surprised if you see him again, because I like offensive rebounds. The way we play and how we shoot the basketball, when they don't go in, we need an opportunity to try to get a chance at him again. And he's a guy that can get us some more opportunities. So and he doesn't hurt us defensively as he becomes more comfortable, more familiar with all of the offensive plays and expand his offensive game himself, you know, and just not get down on himself. He's one of those guys that I had to tell him, man, if I had 40 or I had 4 points, you never knew it, because I'm going to walk like I got 40, even if I'm 2 for 18. So every time you miss a layup or miss a shot, don't hang your head. Don't let everybody in the arena know, you know, and I think that's where a few of our guys can grow in that department a little bit, but just, you know what I'm saying? Sometimes you can just fake confidence and toughness. You know, just act like it. You know, it might actually scare the other team, but he's going to be good for us over time, man. But he's done some really good things in his short minutes.
When did you actually have a 2 for 18? I don't remember very many of those.
Oh man, I had I used to put that thing up, Kev. So I'm pretty sure I had a 3 for 18 in a playoff game, man. I couldn't hit the side of a barn, but you know, just you had those stretches sometimes. But it's about coming back from it. But again, you couldn't tell it. My walk and my beat didn't change one bit because, again, like I said, you never let them see you sweat.
That's right. Now, and I was watching some of the All-Star Game stuff over the weekend, and, you know, Steph Curry was out there. And I got to thinking, okay, say over the last 25 years, who would you say is the greatest shooter? It's obviously, you know, Steph and Klay Thompson on that team. You got, you know, Ray Allen and Reggie Miller. Which ones would you put maybe a notch above the others?
I mean, Steph Curry's the best shooter of all time, man. Mm-hmm. That I've seen. I mean, obviously, there were some guys back there. I mean, Jerry West was a great shooter. I mean, Pistol Pete and those guys. I didn't really put my eyes on those guys, but as far as just shooting that basketball. You know, Reggie Miller made, you know, big shots at big times. You know, Allen Houston is one of the guys that I've always talked about as just a pure shooter. But as far as the range and really how he kind of revolutionized the game, Steph Curry for me. I mean, Klay Thompson, he's good. I mean, he has as pretty a shot. I mean, I think if you had an encyclopedia of what a shot should look like, you know, technically – that's definitely Klay Thompson, but Steph, man, what he did, and I'm telling you, Dame Lillard isn't far behind.
I think you're probably right about that. Yep.
I think we're watching two of the all-time greats right now in the game. Now, not to take anything away from, you know, Ray Allen or what he was able to accomplish from the three-point line, but these guys right now, man, it's on another level.
Well, Jerry, hopefully our team could be on another level this week and see a lot more basketball to come. Thanks, as always, for the time. Good luck in the SEC tournament.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks.
It's Coach Jerry Stackhouse and his Vanderbilt team will be on the court on Wednesday night over at Bridgestone Arena. 6 o'clock start for Vanderbilt and Texas A&M. Interesting conversation there about the greatest shooter. I was just thinking about that. Like, just say last 20, 25 years. It's hard to argue that Steph is the best and maybe the best ever. Well, we come back, going to get in some golf. Scott Limbaugh, the men's golf coach at Vanderbilt, is going to join us after his team rallied and finished second in the LSU Invitational over the weekend. So Coach Limbaugh is on deck. This is Commodore Hour. Remind you, Gupton Jeep is your Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram headquarters. Been serving Middle Tennessee for almost 60 years. We'll be right back. Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us on this beautiful Monday in the Music City. We, of course, have terrific guests for you tonight. A couple segments there with Jerry Stackhouse. Hope you enjoyed our visit with the head basketball coach. We're going to shift things around just a little bit. Men's golf coach Scott Limbaugh will join us a little bit later in this half hour. Right now, we're going to bring in Vanderbilt Athletic Hall of Famer, class of 2017, the first African-American women's golfer in the Southeastern Conference, played 4 years on the Futures Tour, earned an MBA and a law degree, has been an attorney in Houston. She's Nakia Davis. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, how are you?
Doing just fine. Everybody doing okay?
Yes, we're doing just fine down here in Houston.
Yeah, I was just wondering, did everybody recover from the bad weather we had a couple weeks ago?
We did. It reminded me of my days at Vandy, as a matter of fact, because it was a lot of ice and slick driving, and but we made it through okay, and we don't want to see any more of those for a while though.
Yeah, I think we can say the same thing here in Nashville. You know, when you look back to your college career, what's most special about that time and the history you made, as I mentioned a moment ago?
Gosh, that's a great question. When I first, David Williams first called me in 2017, it really took me by surprise. It was such an honor to be inducted into the Hall of Fame then, and even this year to be featured with some of the events going on for Black History Month has really been an honor. It made me reflect on those times, which, I don't know about you, but the years are passing and that time is further and further away, but it just reminded me of, you know, how far things have come. I was, you know, being the first African-American woman in the SEC to play golf. I didn't think of it, in any special way back then, other than I was really just trying to play my best and do my best academically and athletically. But of course, as the years have gone by, the significance seems to have heightened. And you know, when I first started, just to put it into perspective, you know, this was before golf was really cool, before Tiger Woods, right?
Before. Yes.
You know, so now golf is super cool, and it's just been really great to see it progress to be, you know, more and more diverse, with, as time goes on.
Are you amazed like I am at just how good and talented some of the young players are now?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I have kids and I tell them it's a power game now, right? And mm-hmm. You have to hit it far. They just keep getting better and better. The Vanderbilt women, of course, they're doing so well and have just done so well over the years. But it has definitely turned into a power game. Speaking of power game, I should have mentioned this though earlier. Being the first African American female golfer, and little known Black history fact is that my sister was actually the second, and she played golf for Ole Miss. So we kind of have a double Black history moment there in the Davis family.
That's very cool. Very cool indeed. You talk about it being such a power game. Do you ever watch, say, pro golf and think about how you might have played with the technology and the equipment and all the stuff they have today at their disposal?
You know, timing is everything, right?
right.
I played on the Symetra Futures Tour for a few years after, and I always joke that I said, you know, when I realized that I wasn't going to make quite as much money as Tiger was making, then I just decided to go to law school. So I do still play, and it's really tough to keep up with the equipment, to be honest. And now you have Bryson DeChambeau, who is just, you know, making it just a totally different game, and I think you really are going to have to hit it far to be able to compete with these the young women and men that are coming up now.
Yeah, Bryson DeChambeau is a whole different ballgame. Just in everything he does, you know, with the way his clubs are set up and all that stuff, he is an interesting case study for golf. Our guest is Nakia Davis, Vanderbilt Athletic Hall of Famer, class of 2017, who's a great golfer at Vanderbilt back in the 90s. When you think back, what was the toughest course you played during your college career?
Wow. I think the toughest course I've played, I just think even locally, the Golf Club of Tennessee and Legends are both challenging. Tennessee has such beautiful courses, and those were both really tough. My strong suit is that I hit it pretty straight, and I had a great short game. I'd like to think I can kind of get up and down from a trash can, as my dad would say. But those were some of my favorite courses, and I actually, those were just beautiful, and I'd love to even one day when I come back to Nashville try to get on those courses and play 18 again.
Now, did your sister have a similar game to you?
No, that's funny you ask. Speaking of a power game, and that's actually what made me bring her up. Even think about that is she hits it a mile. And she also has a great short game. So we've recently sort of reignited our passions for golf now that our kids are getting older, and and playing golf tournaments themselves. You know, it's hard to find the time now that they're the priority. But we're definitely a golfing family from top to bottom, and you know I think we'll have a lot of friendly competitions. I see that in our future.
Yeah, it's amazing how much less time you have to play golf when there are children involved. I can tell you that firsthand too. You know.
Right. Right. The golf game suffers, that's for sure. But it's fun, you know, nonetheless. It's great to see them play and take such an interest in it and really love the game. We'll see one of the, you know, they say I have three of them. So, you know, depending on the day of the week, they do say, well, I want to go to Vanderbilt. So, you know, maybe one day. Right.
Yeah. Sounds like a good plan. You mentioned playing on the Futures Tour. Those pro tours sometimes aren't nearly as glamorous as people might think. What do you take away from that whole experience?
That you're absolutely right about that. It is a grind, if there ever was one, you sort of live out of your car, you know, you go from tournament to tournament and you drive, as a matter of fact, because, you know, funds are always, you're always trying to get sponsors and pay for the mini tours. I wouldn't trade the experience for anything. It taught me a lot about perseverance, and really independence, because I was, sure, you know, 21, just graduated from Vanderbilt. And really out there on my own, driving thousands of miles, you know, before cell phones were, I'm really dating myself now, right?
I'm right there with
cell
you.
Phones were, right. You know, I'd call and check in with my parents, you know, at different checkpoints along the way, but I definitely put a lot of miles on my car. I will say that.
How much do you keep up with your old teammates?
You know, we're friends on Facebook, and so we definitely check in and keep up with each other that way. And I think they had our event that we were going to attend in person. I think COVID kind of affected that, but hopefully, sometime soon when things sort of normalize, we can have a bit of a reunion. I know Coach Allen was working on that, and so hopefully we can make that happen sometime soon.
But again, it's a pleasure speaking with you. Congratulations on all your success on the golf course and in your career. It's a lot of fun having you on our show tonight.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. We'll talk to you soon. That's Nakia Davis, Vanderbilt Athletic Hall of Famer, class of 2017, who is the first African-American woman golfer in the Southeastern Conference. And as she told us, her sister was the second. So a very unique historical distinction there. But a lot of fun to talk about her career and catch up a little bit. And if you're a former athlete or you just want more information about the Vanderbilt Black and Gold Club, you can go to vucommodores.com. Look under the National Commodore Club section. You can find all the information you need. And you can get involved if you choose to. So appreciate Nakia joining us, and that was neat to have that conversation for sure. Coming up next, we'll have men's golf coach Scott Limbaugh join us for a few minutes. His team played very well down in Louisiana over the weekend. We'll talk about how they did and what's ahead for that group. As we continue, this is Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back to Commodore Hour, live from Nashville. Great to have you with us this evening. Let's talk a little about the Vanderbilt men's golf team. They rallied but finished second in the LSU Invitational. Illinois at 12 over par was the winner. Vanderbilt at plus 14. Commodores came in second. Matthew Riedel, one of only two players individually under par at minus two. He finished second as well. So a terrific showing at the LSU Invitational in Louisiana over the weekend. We bring in men's golf coach Scott Limbaugh for a few minutes. Scott, what's going on this evening?
Hey, Kevin. I'm doing great, buddy. How you doing?
Doing just fine. Now, you said you were really proud of the fight and toughness out of your group. What did this team show you this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, we went into the final round 8 or 9 strokes off the lead, and really it was a tough day on probably the toughest golf course we've played all year. And guys came out really strong. And, you know, I think at some point we had a 5 or 6 stroke lead on the back nine. And kind of came down between us and Illinois. They made some plays and made some shots, and we made some. And it was really good for our team. Man, you know, you always want to come out on top, but this time of year, it's about learning and growing, and hopefully we'll be better. You know, we got a young team, and hopefully we'll be better the next time we're in that situation.
You talk about the course being tough. How different are the courses and setups you play in these tournaments, especially around the South?
Yeah, this is, you know, the first time we've had a schedule quite like this, Kevin. Usually this time of year, we're going to South Florida, usually do a trip, you know, to Cabo. And so this has actually been really cool for us. You know, with COVID, we're playing each tournament we're playing in is hosted by SEC schools. And, you know, to go to see some of our peers' home golf courses, we don't do that a ton, actually. And so it's good. Every time we're going to these tournaments, we're learning. You know, a few of these tournaments we go to over and over each year. Well, this year, every course we're going to is new, and so we're having to kind of grow as a team together and learn. And the wind was up at LSU, you know, blew 20 to 30 every day, which made it a great challenge.
Now, as a coach during the tournament while it's going on and when it's close like it was over this weekend, you keep an eye on the leaderboard. What do you advise the players in terms of keeping track where they are and where the team stands while they're out there on the course playing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kevin. I'm not a huge leaderboard guy. I walked with a freshman on our team, Cole Sherwood, made his Commodore debut in the lineup. And so I walked all – it's kind of one of the things I really enjoy doing. When a guy gets in there for the first time, I want to kind of be in that moment with them and kind of see what we're dealing with. And so I walked all 54 holes with Cole last week. And you know, I would say our culture is one of which we believe that we have the talent, and if we do what we're capable of doing, we don't need to be worried about the scoreboard. We need to be worried about doing our jobs. And now I think down the stretch, certainly in the last round, we were letting guys know where they were and where we were as a team, because you want them to learn those feels. You know, I've tried to relate to them that, you know, that could be an SEC championship, that could be a regional championship, that could be a national championship. So you want to learn those feels. But, I don't know. I'm a big believer that you can play down to that scoreboard as well. So, you know, we've had a little bit of success. And for the most part, we do it by, you know, putting our head down and doing the best we can do every day.
Matthew was outstanding, 4 under par on Sunday, 2 under for the tournament. Where has he progressed the most from freshman to sophomore year?
Yeah, great question. Matthew's a super mature young person, first and foremost. So his emotional state is never too high or too low. He was the exact same person after he finished second at LSU as he was when he finished 70th in our first event down in Gainesville. So to me, that just allows him to kind of respond. And he's a really hard worker. He's very intelligent, and honestly, all of his best golf's in front of him. So we couldn't be more pumped about, you know, the way he's growing. But I would just say the way he's matured the most is just his understanding of what it takes. You know, we've had guys kind of have to step up this year a little bit faster than you would want them to, just based on losing some players and things like that. And so far, guys have really responded to that. I mean, we're definitely not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but we got some young guys that have stepped up, and Matthew certainly being one of them.
Scott Limbaugh is our guest. He is the men's golf coach at Vanderbilt and has been a very successful one over the years. You know, when you think about pros from the program, especially recently, Will Gordon's off to a great start in his career. John Augustine's just getting started. Of course, Luke List and Sneds have been out there a long time. What impresses you about those guys and just the way they've made that transition from college to pro golf?
Man, Kevin, Sneds, Brant, and Luke did it before my time here, but what good guys they are and great representatives of our university and our golf program. So that'd be the first thing that jumps out. And then as I see some of our more recent guys, Will Gordon, you know, if you watch Will play, he plays a super powerful game. I mean, he's one of the top 10 longest players on the PGA Tour, and he and Matthias Schwab have had the most success, Matthias having most of his success over on the European Tour, and those have been kind of our two guys that have gotten out there and had the most success. I think Will's one of only 10 players, and you know, to ever get their card without going through Q school at all. And and John just getting started, has had 4 starts on the PGA Tour, and I have no doubt that as he continues to get a little more comfortable and an understanding of what it takes, I think he'll find his way out there sooner rather than later.
Now, I asked Will this when we had him on the show a few weeks ago about which, you know, players that weren't golfers for Vanderbilt but were athletes in other sports were the best players. Which ones have you experienced? I don't even know, like, how many of them you've come in contact with or seen play, but when you think back to your time at Vanderbilt, which guys could really play from other sports?
You know, we see a lot of those baseball players hanging out there, to be honest with you. Kevin, we see a lot of Coach Corbin's boys out there wanting to be golfers, and some of them are darn good. But there's no doubt that a lot of those guys spend a lot of even during the quarantine. I saw quite a few of those players that were, you know, some of those major league players. They were in town and playing, and some of them are pretty good, and to actually take the game pretty serious.
Now, golf is one sport that people could play during the pandemic. How much did COVID impact your team's preparation?
Yeah, I mean, we just like everything else, we shut down. We literally, what was a little more than a year ago, we were coming back from a West Coast trip, kind of getting our spring season started. And, at first it was paused, but we all thought that it was over. And it's funny, I don't know about you, Kip, but I remember sitting there watching, was Vanderbilt play? Were we playing Arkansas in that first?
Yeah, playing Arkansas in the SEC tournament.
Yeah.
Tournament. Yep.
And I just remember sitting there watching that, and when that breaking news about Rudy Gobert came, I was like, I looked at my wife, I said, "That's it. You know, we're done." Mm-hmm. And you're going to remember that for the rest of your life, you know. And for our kids, you know, just wanting to really take care of them mentally and emotionally, they all went home, and I think, you know, golf, they were able to play in golf tournaments, I think, starting in July. So you kind of had, you know, half of March, April, May, June, and then maybe some golf started up in June. I can't remember. But, we do got some kids that were in some areas that golf courses didn't open up at the same time. But I think it gave everybody a healthy appreciation of things, to be honest with you, Kevin. Don't take a day for granted. Don't take a time with your teammates for granted. You know, and don't let the moment of time slip by. You really want to just enjoy and embrace these moments that you have with your teammates. And I really do think there's been a great life lesson there. And even for myself as a coach, don't take, you know, the times for granted, but rather just enjoy them and be together during those.
Yeah, I've kind of felt some of those same feelings over this last year, and that was really well said, no doubt about it. Scott, appreciate the time. Keep up the good work, and looking forward to seeing where your team's headed this spring.
I appreciate that. Take care, and I appreciate y'all having me on.
Anytime. Thanks a lot. That's golf coach Scott Limbaugh joining us here on Commodore Hour. He's had a very successful program, and we mentioned those names of guys playing on the PGA Tour, and really a lot of success. You look at the Arnold Palmer Invitational over the weekend. Will Gordon tied for 49th at 4 over par. Luke List tied for 63 at plus 6. Brant Snedeker tied for 68th. John Augustine missed the cut. He went 83-80 in the first two rounds. We'll come back, finish things up in just a moment. Commodore Hour, and this is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College. Welcome back. About to finish up Commodore Hour on this Monday night. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Steve Goldberg, and also to Max Herz here in Nashville, among the many hats he wears, helping get our show on the air every week. Does a great job. We wanted to make sure and say congratulations to Kathy Bender, chosen for this year's class of the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. She was a guest on our show just a few weeks ago. Native of Mount Juliet, played basketball at Vanderbilt from 1978 through 82, was the first African-American female to earn a full scholarship at Vanderbilt. So congratulations. Kathy is a part of the 2021 class for the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame, announced just a few days ago. A few other things going on around the campus there as you kind of take a look at the other teams in action. Women's soccer, just in the last hour or so, a new logo, a new crest was unveiled today. Very cool emblem for women's soccer, and you can get that on some merch. So Good stuff for Coach Ambrose and his program. They finished the exhibition season with a 2-1 loss in a friendly against Racing Louisville FC. They will play Kennesaw State on Thursday at 3 o'clock. In lacrosse, Gabby Fornia and Melissa Hawkins won weekly honors from the American Athletic Conference. Fornia, the attack player of the week. Hawkins, the defensive player of the week. The team is 4-2 after win over High Point Sunday, 17-13 at Vanderbilt Stadium. And in women's tennis, ranked number 9 in the country, 11-2, 3-2 in the SEC. Scored a 4-2 road win at Missouri. Rallied in singles play after losing in doubles to start the day. Bowen came in 9th in the Music City Classic. That will do it for this edition of Commodore Hour. Make sure you're with us for men's basketball Wednesday night, 6 o'clock, Vanderbilt and Texas A&M in the SEC Tournament at Bridgestone Arena, 5:30 pregame. And tomorrow we will have Vanderbilt baseball, and that will be a 4:30 start pregame at 4:15 for Vanderbilt and Memphis from Hawkins Field. That will do it for this show. I'm Kevin Ingram. Say goodnight. This is the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield, IMG College.
Thanks for listening to tonight's edition of Commodore Hour. Tonight's show was brought to you by Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics. Regions, get the Vanderbilt University Visa check card from Regions. Visit regions.com/anchor down to order yours today. And by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. The preceding was a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.